Sometimes Saturdays are rather sleepy in the news cycle. Today was not the case, as most of us woke up to the news out of Venezuela and the operation done by our military there. It's in that vein that I thank Lieutenant General Richard Newton for joining us here today on short notice to hop on with us. Lieutenant General Newton, thank you. Well, we appreciate it.
Yeah, good afternoon, John. I was awakened very early this morning. As you know, I'm the senior national security trimmer to News Nation. So it's been quite a day.
Yeah, it sure has been. We can talk about the maybe domestic and international discussions that will take place in the coming days and weeks about the operation. But just from an X's and O's perspective, and you'd be an expert at this, boy, it seems like it was a well-rehearsed and well-executed operation.
Yeah, stunning operation, rather daring, rather bold. And it was really, think in terms of not only from the U.S. military standpoint, but other players in this. This was conducted, obviously, by the U.S. military, but also with exquisite support from U.S. intelligence. That would be the Central Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency, and so forth, as well as U.S. law enforcement played a role in this, certainly from the Department of Justice on down. It was a very complex operation, involved over 150 aircraft, thousands of airmen, soldiers, Marines, sailors, and space guardians who provided space capabilities in terms of the pathway into the target and so forth. Very complex, as I said. And frankly, our joint force in this case, and specifically the military, you know, but really makes it look easy. But now the hard part begins in terms of what's next. We can get into that, but bottom line here, this was a very bold military operation, absolutely successful, and a credit to exquisite detailed planning, precision, stealth, and so forth. And so this is, again, I think a very good day for the Venezuelan people, very good day for the United States, and not so much for the Maduro regime and even perhaps Russia and China, other adversaries.
Of course, all of everyone thankful that no military members perished in this extremely daring event that involved some parts of Caracas losing power beforehand. And the president kind of stopped short explaining exactly how that happened. But he was not short on talking about the replica building being built. I mean, a lot of this has sort of odes to what the Osama bin Laden raid was like, Lieutenant General Newton. Am I wrong in kind of talking about that this was maybe a months-long ramp-up of this operation?
Months and then some. Absolutely. And you're right. It does harken back to the bin Laden takedown in Pakistan. Also, we can go back, John, even further back to late December of 1989 and early January, when Manuel Noriega was taken down because he was also a drug trafficker and a human trafficker, was brought to justice and held in Miami and brought to trial in court, in a federal court, and then in prison. Actually, John, interesting enough, I was in the Pentagon. I was working for the Air Force senior operations lead. I was a major. He was a three-star at the time. And so I was somewhat familiar from the Pentagon standpoint of that takedown of Noriega several decades or so ago. But it also happened that he was actually captured on the 3rd of January, 1990. And so fast forward to today, you know, that took actually 2 years to plan and exercise and train and actually conduct the operation. This one was actually really done over, you know, a couple months or so. But again, exquisite planning, precision, stealth, and the joint operational aspect of this across the Department of War, Department of Justice, intelligence community is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in awe when you see exactly how it happened from an X's and O's perspective. Of course, the president's got to make this tough call here, right? And it's a military call, it's a political call, it's an international law call. And a lot of people heralding this as a win, of course, but you're going to have people domestically and internationally maybe not agreeing with the decision or how ultimately this all plays out. What does the U.S. use as a legal justification for doing this? Or is this a moment to, I don't know, ignore international law in effect and protect your domestic side? You kind of see what I'm getting at here, Lieutenant General?
I do, John, and it's a fair question. It's the right question. But you go back to first and foremost, from U.S. law standpoint, Secretary of State Rubio had designated the Cartel of the Suns a foreign terrorist organization. You know, a while ago, there was the aspect of Maduro had been the president of a of Venezuela, but also what's unique about him is he's also the head of the major drug cartel, as I just mentioned. And so that's a very unique situation in terms of what's happening in the world and from a standpoint. But I would also, from an international law standpoint, the United States has every, again, reason in the world to protect our U.S. national interests as well as protect the American people. Drugs have been flowing from Venezuela to the United States. There's also another aspect of this. Under previous administrations, the sanctioned oil inside of Venezuela, as well as the sanctioned oil tankers that, again, even as I mentioned, under previous administrations had, filed in court that's why President Trump, authorized the blockade of the Caracas port areas and so forth. And so this has been a long time coming. The other aspect of this from a broader standpoint, John, the geopolitical standpoint, is President Trump and the administration had given Venezuela and particularly the Maduro himself plenty of time to, back out of this, perhaps try to compel him to go into exile in Cuba or Russia. He chose not to do so, although about 36 hours or so ago, you may recall, he had publicly made a statement that he wanted to have serious discussions with the president or with the administration to figure out what the next steps would be. But by then, there was really no indication that he was willing to give up. In fact, he was even meeting with a Chinese delegation. In fact, the Chinese lead for Latin America affairs met with Maduro yesterday. In fact, while the attack and the capture was going on very early this morning, there's still a Chinese delegation in Caracas and so forth. Final point is, this is not just necessarily just about Venezuela, although that's key and so forth, but it's also sending a message to, in the 21st century, the United States under centuries-old Monroe Doctrine. Monroe Doctrine now in 2026 is a message to how we want to make sure that freedom and democracy reigns in Latin America. We want to make sure that drug trafficking is significantly curtailed, that's harming American citizens. This illegal sanctioned oil that is, on the black market for these ghost ships will no longer sail from Venezuela, where you've got Maduro's and others skimming millions and millions of dollars off of that, is benefiting our adversaries. But it's a message also to China and Russia as well. So there's a lot going on here. But now, as we talked, the hard work begins next.
Yeah, I do want to get into that. And a couple of texts are coming in wondering this exact same point, wondering if there's unintended consequences that could come from the idea that the United States or any country could go into a country and take a leader from that country for violating laws in another one. Some people might argue that that's a violation of UN charter law. You could make the argument this is self-defense. Is there an imminent threat? I mean, we could go back and forth on this, but ultimately, I think one worry is that does this potentially embolden other countries? And I think the most obvious example would be China into Taiwan to say, well, if the U.S. can do this, we can do this too.
Well, it potentially there are unintended consequences here, but that's why the United States needs to maintain a strong position in the world militarily, diplomatically, economically, and financially, and so forth. I just gave you all the tools of U.S. national security. It's not just a military tool, but I think my experience, and now that I've been in the private sector for going on 15 years or so. And I would reach back into my days when I was on active duty, is the fact is really the only thing these adversaries, these bullies such as a Putin and so forth, really the only thing they understand is power. That's what really deters aggression and future aggression. And that's why I make a claim that the fact that the United States has stood strong. Look what we did on June 22nd, taking down the Iranian nuclear weapons development capability with 7 B-2 bombers and several Tomahawk missiles from a submarine. An Operation Hammer, and what that has done to really, I think, more stabilize the Mideast, certainly prevented the Mideast from a breakout of a nuclear weapon with an adversary, not only the United States, but other Gulf partners in the region with regard to nuclear weapons. Fast forward to now here in Venezuela and the Caribbean. The fact is that there's been many administrations wringing their hands over the fact that you've got a Chavez, but now a Maduro, who had been leading Venezuela, had been corrupt, had actually taken away the standing election of the duly elected opponent last year and previous campaigns and so forth. That's now done away with. So it now gives a sense of freedom and brings back an opportunity for democracy like it had reigned in Venezuela several decades ago to come back. And so that's what I would that's what I would consider in terms of not shying away from, I think, U.S. leading the, you know, from that standpoint of free world and so forth, that we make our claim to do just that.
145 on WGN. It's John Hansen here on Let's Get Legal, joined by Lieutenant General Richard Newton, who is not only generous enough to come in last minute, but give us a little extra time here today, which we appreciate. You say, and the president says, you know, we run Venezuela now. I think a lot of people, I shouldn't use this term lightly, have PTSD, but a lot of Americans do, from us saying we're going to run a Latin American country, or we're going to help them pivot, whether it's our previous history in Latin America or the Middle East. You understand, I imagine, why some Americans, that gives them pause. Do you not?
I do. I totally understand. You know, my dad served in Korea and Vietnam, and I've served in a number of, you know, hot spots in the world and so forth. And you know, you think back to our own history, Vietnam, Iraq, and so forth. It does. I was a little bit surprised by the president's pronouncement with regard to the fact that we're going to, quote, run Venezuela. We do have to make sure that we go into a situation such as this. And by the way, we're talking not a long-standing conflict here. This is 3 hours. It started, you know, late last or very early this morning, and Maduro and his wife were aboard the Iwo Jima, you know, on about 3:40 in the morning. But the hard part does begin here, and I think that's one of the challenges we've had as a nation is the what next piece of this. Go back to Operation Iraqi Freedom and so forth in 2003 and fast forward to today. I think what the president's trying to do here, and we're going to hear more about this, by the way, but in order to stabilize the Venezuelan, the conditions with regard to the governance, the fact that they've had their freedoms taken away, usher in and allow for the opposition party or those, you know, who represent not only just U.S. interests, but the Venezuelan people's interests in terms of democracy and financial security and so forth. That's one point. That's a political standpoint. Second aspect of this is, you know, Venezuela, all data says is owns and holds and controls, you know, the largest known oil reserve in the world. And so there's economic feasibility here, not only for, you know, Venezuelan people and Venezuela economic finances, but U.S., our corporations going in there and again having an economic financial responsibility and opportunity with regard to the oil revenues that can come out of that. That will benefit not only the United States, but the Venezuelan people and frankly all of Latin America. So there's that piece of it. Go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to, you're making great points here. This is why this is so complex. There's nothing black and white about any of this, right? And you're not going to find Maduro defenders who are necessarily in any way supportive of keeping him there, or I guess at least supportive of his actions. You know, I think some people's legitimate concern is, let's look at Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein. No supporters of those people as well, but when those people are gone, power vacuums exist, and sometimes what fills in the vacuum of power isn't all that better, sometimes much worse, sometimes the devil you know. That's not a great argument, Lieutenant General, but that's one that people make sometimes.
I agree with that. I was kind of going to go there. In fact, I'm kind of there right now. Again, we've only heard President Trump's pronouncements here for a couple hours, but as I think about this, and I think the way I'm going to look at this in the coming days, is you're right. Is you want that vacuum to be filled by Maduro's, you know, his henchmen that are still in power, who still hold, you know, a big stick over the Venezuelan people? Or do you want to go in there and say, okay, we're gonna help solve this for U.S. national security interests? Yes. But also really for the Venezuelan people. You know, we've had a very strong relationship with Venezuela, as I mentioned, several years or so, decades or so ago. And so what we want to do is we want to restore their opportunity to have a democratic-led government, to prosper with regard to that largest oil reserve, you know, that sits underneath them, literally. And therefore, all will benefit from that. By the way, not just the United States and Venezuela, but frankly, all of Latin America. That's why President Trump made a pronouncement several weeks or so ago when he ushered in and announced his U.S. national security strategy for the Trump administration. And that was to focus on Latin America, our own backyard, because we, you know, we frankly neglected it per se, but we've been so focused on other areas of the world, Indo-Pacific, and rightly so, by the way, China, Taiwan, Europe, Ukraine, Russia, the Mideast, Iran, and so forth, and supporting our allies, Israel. Now it's time, I think, also we have an opportunity here to focus on, you know, our own hemisphere, to protect the American people, but also the interests that are for the United States, as well as to grow democracy and, frankly, grow economically and financially for the rest of the region.
You mentioned a couple other bullies on the world stage, Kim Jong-un, Vladimir Putin. Some people might say, well, you got Maduro. Why aren't you going after that? Is that simply a tactical decision that it would just be too costly to go after Kim Jong-un or Vladimir Putin, who some could argue have done worse on the world stage?
Well, to go after doesn't necessarily mean directly attack. I think what it really means, because, you know, I'm not an advocate for being the world's policeman per se, but I think what we're really should be doing, and I believe the Trump administration is trying to do so, and other administrations have tried to do so as well, but to stay engaged in the world by making sure we have the most modern, capable military. We demonstrated that early this morning. We certainly demonstrated that on June 22nd, going after the Iranian nuclear weapons development sites and so forth. But that's what's important also. But you can't be everywhere with, a 2 million person, absolutely awesome military. Our son-in-law is Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Air Force as a special operations pilot and so forth. Our other son served a tour in Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth. So we understand the challenges you've had. But you can also use other instruments of national power, John, as I mentioned. The economic financial tool, you can, in terms of being strong in the diplomatic arena as well. So how we engage is not necessarily directly with a kinetic strike against, a Putin or a Kim Jong-un or Xi and so forth, but with other tools. And that's what I would advocate for. But only use the military. I'd like to think, and we tried everything up until this morning. We tried other tools. We tried diplomatic, financial, blockades, and show of force, that type of thing. Finally, we went to the more kinetic aspect of this. You want to use that tool last, then you can't use it every time.
I'd imagine that, obviously, the president well advised on what's possible from a military perspective, as you're mentioning. But they, I imagine, game plan all this stuff from the Secretary of State or from the State Department and other departments to talk about exactly the questions that I'm raising, right? I mean, this isn't like I'm raising a question and the government goes, huh, I hadn't thought of that. They work all this in their war planning, yes?
Absolutely, and I've been part of that in my day. Spent many hours at the White House and the White House sit room and so forth, and on sort of two tours of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I oversaw global operations for the Joint Chiefs, and I can absolutely claim of my own experience make sure our listeners understand that there is a very, very intricate planning, timely, that takes, this is not just off the back of a napkin, exquisite planning, timing, exercising, training, going all over again because you get new conditions and so forth. But it's to make sure that our men and women in uniform and also our intelligence community personnel are, first off, well-equipped. They're well-trained, well-exercised. They know exactly what they're getting into, and they're very well-led. Then you go to the president and says, okay, we're ready. Make sure all the conditions are set. But it takes, in this case, it took months planning down to more precision planning up until the last several days, down to the last several hours. Everything was lined up to include the weather, to include the moon condition, include the location, precise location of where Maduro and his wife were located in this compound in downtown Caracas. It made sure that we had our space capabilities and our cyber capabilities lined up so we knew exactly pinpoint details using those domains, frankly. And then what we'll do, and here's something that maybe people won't think about, we will garner lessons learned from this operation and apply it to future operations to make sure that, again, our men and women are properly trained, equipped, and exercised. And the fact is that, again, we don't want to win 31-28 in overtime. We want to win 99-0 in the first quarter. And that's exactly what happened a couple hours or so ago. But we've got to make sure that we continue to do this and we're prepared to do this because there's going to be other bullies out there, other nations and other adversaries or even non-state actors who want to do us harm. We've got to make sure we deter them from acting against U.S. national security interests and trying to harm Americans. And if that deterrence fails, John, we've got the capability to go in with the same exquisite planning, the same exercising, training, and attacking if need be.
154 on WGN. Just one last thought I'll leave you with, Lieutenant General, and again, appreciate your extra time you've given us today. Despite all the game planning, all the thoughts of power vacuums, everything, you can call the X's and O's, you can execute the plays well, But we really don't know what happens next. And that's where history sometimes decides when we look back whether this was the right call or the wrong call. Because a lot of different things happen when you change the world order, quote unquote, like this. Maybe I'm overstating that, but certainly changing the world order in Venezuela. There's a lot of unknowns still, despite your best intelligence out there.
There are. And Secretary Rumsfeld, who I worked with in the Pentagon, you know, he would talk about, you know, known unknowns. And then there's some of the case where there's unknown unknowns and so forth. And that's why, you know, you train, you exercise, you make sure your men and women are ready to go. You know, these are America's sons and daughters. Now there are American, you know, grandkids as well. Now that I'm a grandfather with 15 grandkids. And so the point is that, you know, you don't know in that case. That's why you've got to be ready to fight today. You've got to deter today and be ready in case that you have to fight tomorrow. And so you try to set those conditions. That's why our relationships are so strong, where we stay engaged. We stay engaged with diplomacy. We stay engaged with you know, other aspects of U.S. national security. We train other militaries to you know, train like us and to maybe even think like us. And when you've got an adversary that comes that really wants to change the world landscape, such as a Putin, who has the largest nuclear weapons arsenal in the world, by the way. You've got China modernizing their military faster and more capable than we've ever seen before. That's why we have to make sure that we are ready to fight today, but we can deter tomorrow.
Lieutenant General Richard Newton, retired general, we appreciate your time. Seriously, thank you for the extra time too today. It means a lot, and I appreciate you, and good luck the rest of the day, okay?
Thank you, John. Best to you. Always delighted to be with WGN.
We appreciate that.